south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, how about this email from Daryl in L.A.? He says, Johnny, I heard you mention on your show not so long ago a little story involving Montezuma's revenge. I'm here to tell you, there is more than one kind of Montezuma's revenge. When you hear my Montezuma story, you probably won't believe it, but I assure you, it's true. Excuse me if I'm rambling, not making much sense, but I'm so ready to get the hell out of Dodge. I work at Stanford University, and I'm just surrounded by 20 and 30-something Latinos, second and third generation Latinos, who call themselves Latinx or Latinxers. I've heard you on your show mention the controversies around that prefabricated lame word, too, Latinx. Normally, I wouldn't have a bone to pick with them, but just the other day, one of them called me out, one of those woke Latinx guys, when I used the phrase Montezuma's revenge for a joke, mind you. Here's how it happened. After taking a day off from work to go to the doctor, a sick day, one of those Latinx guys who works in my lab said, "You weren't here yesterday. What happened?" I said, "Montezuma's revenge." Well, he gave me a nasty look and said, "You better watch out." He said people are getting canceled and fired for using the term Montezuma's revenge. "It's racist," he said. I said, "What? Talk about ironies." I said, "That's funny. My Mexican brother-in-law uses the term all the time." And in the moment, I was thinking, but I didn't say it out loud, because the fool would probably call human resources on me. I was thinking, Montezuma's revenge is revenge against us white invaders, right? I was thinking Latinos should get secret pleasure out of that, watching a white guy squirm and panic as he bolts up from his chair in a Mexican restaurant and sprints to the John. So it's racist now, is it? But my main problem now is those woke second and third generation Latinos who now identify as Latinxers. Speaking of my Latino brother-in-law of Mexican extraction, he says my Mexican brother-in-law can't stand the word Latinx either. He cringes when he hears it. He calls people who use that term Latino snowflakes. He says he doesn't see how they have the right to criticize white Americans. Those Latinx fools, he says, most of them, he says, have never been back to their parents' or grandparents' country of origin. He said if it wasn't for homegrown Americans, where would they be? Back in Honduras making $300 a month in a Nike t-shirt factory. Oh, and just for clarification, Johnny, my brother-in-law is 46 years old, second-generation Mexican. He agrees that the Latinx thing is a brain disease that only seems to affect certain college-educated 20-something Latinos, the so-called Generation Z, the Zoomers. But we knew that already, right? Well, thanks for that, Daryl. God, I'm so glad I'm not living up in the States. How you can deal with that Latinx crap and the pronoun crap on a daily basis, I don't know. You sound like you're ready to leave, yet you expat gonna-bees and wannabes just keep hanging on and hanging on. You say you're going to get the hell out of Dodge. But how many of you really do? How much is just hot air or wishful thinking, good intentions, and all that? Have you wondered about that too? People ask me, how many people or what percentage of people who've attended Expat Insider seminars actually end up getting the hell out of Dodge? I'd say if you take the long view and examine the lives of the Expat Insider seminar attendees 5 years down the line, 5 years post boots on the ground after they've attended, I'd say about 20% pull the trigger. And another 20% don't actually pull the trigger, but they keep coming back down and exploring, making good connections and getting their foot in the door. That 20% still remain living and working, etc., up in the States. But they've got a good escape plan when the shit really hits the fan. No need to panic. They got it down. Question is, how are you set up for when the shit really hits the fan? And it will, you know. It's coming. For everyone listening to this program, there will be a straw that breaks the camel's back. Then what? Are you ready? Oh, wait a minute. There's a P.S. on Daryl's email. He says, Johnny, talk about ironies. Did you know there's a ride called Montezuma's Revenge at Knott's Berry Farm in California? So what are those Latinx fools going to do? Force him to cancel that ride? It wouldn't surprise me, he says. California's gone super woke. All right, me, Johnny here. Knott's Berry Farm. Have you ever been there? I went there once a long time ago in the 70s. Back then, my first impression was of a poor man's Disneyland. All right, now an email from Sarah. She says, Johnny, in a previous show, you were talking about certain English words that should be banned, like the A word. Awesome. Yes, I agree. There are certain boring, repetitive filler words that people should quit using. But I should tell you something that's driving me nuts more than any of those words or phrases that you mentioned. It's the massive, extreme overuse of those laughing face yellow emojis that everyone keeps plastering on emails, chats, and texts. As if whatever was last posted or said produced some kind of epic, gut-wrenching laughing fit. Sorry, I don't need you to virtue signal me with a virtual laughing yellow head. Worse yet was when people popped two or three of those stupid things in a row. Come on, Johnny, does that not strike you as a particularly idiotic thing to do? So I say, please, ban the laughing head emoji. Better yet, make it cost. Make it a finable offense. If it cost a buck every time you use one, people would seriously think about if it was really worth it or not. Though, sometimes I wonder, Johnny, is there anyone out there who hates those things as much as I do? Anyway, Johnny, keep up the good work and stay awesome. Okay, thanks for that, Sarah. I think. You know, you hit a nerve with me on that one, too. I can't stand those laughing head emojis. Though, on occasion, I have used them myself. Lately, I've been using the thumbs up thing a lot. It's less cringeworthy. But she's absolutely right. When was the last time someone texted you with something so funny, you just fell down and split a gut laughing? Probably never. Yet, you keep beating a dead horse with the most overused emoji of all time. I say, cut it out. Get creative, why don't you? Enough said about that. Now, speaking of expats and gringos who complain all the time. Were we talking about that? Well, we are now. Just the other day, I was having a coffee clutch with some gringo expats. And one of them started on about his teenage kid. What a pain in the ass he was, how much trouble he was causing. By the way, the gringo is divorced and his kid is living in the States with his mom. The gringo guy was also whining about having to pay child support for his idiot kid. He went through a litany of complaints about the kid, and in the end he said, but I was like that too. Then shrugged his shoulders. He said, I try to help him out, I try to straighten him out, give him words of advice, but he doesn't listen. He's a teenager, he knows everything. That's when he said his 18-year-old kid wrecked three cars. That's when I thought, man, gringo parents have a fatal flaw. They give their kids way too much shit. I said, you know how to fix that? Make him enlist in the military. I thought, you know, I got one of those in my family, too. Teenage nephew who wrecked his parents' car three times. What the f*** is wrong with parents these days? Speaking of parental advice, I remember my dad, who was always the life of the party around adults. Oddly enough, he was quiet around us kids. He wasn't much for giving advice at all. But I do remember one time he sat me down when I was a teenager. I think I was 13, just turned 13. I remember he said, there are three rules in life. Number one, fit in. Don't be an outsider. Number two, stay out of jail. Number three, don't get anyone pregnant. That was the extent of his advice. Good advice, though, huh? So then what kind of advice did your father give you? Expat Eddie once told me his father gave him one piece of advice. He said, always buy the second round. However, a little later in my adolescent years, when I hit about 18 and started college, I remember my dad tried to explain to me what the business world was all about. After I came home from my night job, stocking shelves at the Kohl's grocery store, I was complaining about my asshole boss, and he said, you know, Johnny, in your life, you will meet assholes. Some who have power over you. Many near-successful or almost-successful people in life are assholes. They want to prove how great they are. Most mega-millionaires and billionaires, however, I've met are pretty nice guys. It's those guys on their way up who you got to look out for. That's why he said it's always better not to work for the man. Be your own boss. Start your own business. Sure, you'll put in 50, 60, 70 hours a week, but you won't have to take abuse or suck up to anyone. Unfortunately, though, my dad was not adventurous enough to start his own business. He didn't take his own advice, so he always worked for the man. But since he was such a nice, friendly guy, he never had any enemies or bosses that picked on him. You ever meet a guy like that? A guy that everyone wants to be his friend? That was my dad. It was said there were more people at his funeral than there were when the mayor died. My mother even told me there were over 20 people who phoned up asking to be his pallbearer. She had to turn 14 of them down because you can only have six. Nope, I guess you figured by now I did not get that nice guy gene. So maybe he wasn't my dad after all. But I kind of think so. My parents were way too Catholic for it to have turned out otherwise. By the way, my parents racked up 5 kids really fast. And then, surprise, surprise, 19 years after I was born, oops, my mom was pregnant again. That's when my dad got a vasectomy. You know, the Pope doesn't like that. It's a no-no. So it became a family secret for a long, long time. Enough said about that. Way too much said about that. All right, let's dig into the email file under D for Dave. Dave fired this email off to me in response to the comments I made a couple of shows ago about how all these moldy, oldie American rockers come through Latin America trying to cash in when they're way past their prime, almost fossilized. Like, for example, Rod Stewart, who's, what, 78 years old now, doing a tour through Latin America? Is that really necessary? And is he really going to sing, "Do You Think I'm Sexy"? How believable is that? Should have hung it up 20 years ago, Rod. Anyway, Dave says, "Johnny, I've got to take issue with you lumping together artists like Kenny G, Michael Bolton, Air Supply, and Rod Stewart. The way I see it," he says, "Kenny G is a jazz flunky who plays consistently sharp over everything he does. Sharp, that is, in the musical intonation sense of the word. True, he's learned a handful of pentatonic runs and repeating licks that sound impressive to laymen. But he plays them over and over and over on annual Christmas CDs that sell in disgusting numbers at Barnes & Noble end caps and cutout bins. Now, Michael Bolton strikes me as a man who would have preferred to have been a rock singer like Dave Coverdale of Whitesnake or Lou Gramm of Foreigner. He has the vocal chops to do it, but instead he carved out the niche of crooner to middle-aged women who want a bit of a rock edge to their diet of Celine Dion, whilst they sip wine and make sure the vacuum lines in their carpets are perfectly parallel. Then he says, "Now me, Johnny, at 37 years old, I'm less familiar with Air Supply, except to know they're on the lighter side of the mid-70s yacht rock scene, and not on par with the likes of Steely Dan, Christopher Cross, or Doobie Brothers at all. Though I'm sure if I heard one of their tunes, I'd recognize it from the produce section at the grocery store." On the other hand, he says, we've got Rod Stewart. He has a long and highly pedigreed career as a rock singer. From the Small Faces to the Jeff Beck Group, his solo career of past decades proves itself. Though I may not cross the street to hear an octogenarian perform "Do You Think I'm Sexy," but I'm sure he's an echelon above Air Supply. Come to think of it, though, the only 80-something I would have gone to see perform that song is Sean Connery. Which would have been magnificent. Signed, Dave. Well, Dave, thanks for that. And you say you're 37 years old. That explains it. You sort of just missed the golden age of rock. You got it all in the first round of classic rock station reruns. Funny thing, though, a lot of guys your age prefer the really definitive stuff, like, you say, Steely Dan, Christopher Cross, Doobie Brothers. You know what I mean. Practically everything from the 70s and late 60s. Because your boomer mom and dad had big record collections, playing it around the house all the time and on the car radio. Now, I do agree with you. Rod Stewart had his golden era, too, when he sang for Jeff Beck on the Truth album. Then he was with the Small Faces, Gasoline Alley, Maggie May, and all that. However, many real musicians and singers will admit Rod Stewart's cred was killed by disco. The guy completely sold out. After that, he kind of turned into a BG with throat polyps. Just saying. But to each his own. All right, digging back into the Dave stack of the email file. This is from another Dave. And I'll paraphrase this a bit. He says, "Hi, Johnny. I liked hearing that story you told a while back and the backstory details about the purchase of a Korean textile factory and the machines in Guatemala. By the way, I should mention Dave here is an Expat Insider Seminar alumnus who came down and saw that factory and met the gringo guy who bought those machines from the Koreans. Dave says, he showed those machines to me soon after he purchased them, by the way. Then he says, when I was teaching English in Korea in the late 90s, I tutored two guys who worked for a Nike contractor when Nike was moving production from Korea to Vietnam. And they went to Vietnam often to oversee the factories there. By the way, Johnny, I remember during the seminar tour of that factory, I asked the owner why there were signs in Korean. I get it now. Speaking of Korean, I'd like you to talk more about, if you can, when you worked for that Korean-owned radio station in Guatemala. Dave says, I had no idea there were so many Koreans in Guatemala. Right, me, John, here. You know, Dave's right. There are lots of South Koreans in Guatemala, but they're almost all in the textile business, either manufacturing or wholesale. The thing is not to confuse the Korean contingent with the Chinese contingent. Guatemala has its Korean businessmen, but there are very few Chinese. You know, Koreans get pissed off if you refer to them as Chinese. But I digress. Back to Dave's email. He says, in fact, I wound up teaching English online to the Korean wife of a former factory owner who became a consultant. I met them in Guatemala City. For me, he says, it's always fun to pop into the Korean stores and start speaking Korean to them. He says, on a recent trip to Guatemala, I was blown away when I got off the plane and looked at the signs in the airport. Check out the photo I sent. If you look next to the English, you'll see Korean at the Aurora International Airport in Guatemala. By the way, he says, I'll be back in Guatemala in August for a week. Signing off, Dave number one. Yeah, he is Dave number one. The original Dave who came down to one of my very first seminars. Dave, by the way, is not Korean. He's a Caucasian guy from California who found his niche early on teaching English online, mostly to Asians on the other side of the world. Now, I don't know how Dave learned Korean. It's a tough language to learn. Though I do remember he did live in South Korea for a while. But still, it's hard to absorb those Asian languages by osmosis. It's hard enough learning Spanish that way. Unless, of course, you've got a Latino boyfriend or girlfriend who speaks no English, or you elect to live with an immersion family that speaks no English at all, only Spanish. Otherwise, as you've heard me mention many times on this show, I know gringos and expats who've been living down here 10, 15, even 20 years, and their Spanish completely sucks. I'm even talking about gringos and expats who live off the gringo tourist trail. Some of them, even after many years, only know 20 or 30 words of Spanish. How about that? But, you know, these days with the internet, it's easy to isolate yourself. You could watch YouTubes and Netflix in English all day long. Some gringos and expats do just that. I know a few. Though I think it can't go wrong. You're going to pick up some Spanish by osmosis if you watch your YouTubes or Netflix, whatever, with the Spanish subtitles below. I mean, listen to it in English, but switch on the Spanish subtitles. Not that they're 100% accurate, but they're close enough. Anyway, they're a lot better now than they used to be. You know why? Because AI, artificial intelligence, is involved. Speaking of AI, I was talking to one of my nerd geek buddies up in the States, works for a software company. He told me the wildest story, but I guess these stories aren't so wild anymore, not when you're talking about AI. He said they had a big layoff in his company recently, and his buddy who works in human resources told him that they had AI, you know, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, OpenAI and all that, write the layoff letters to the employees they're going to give the boot to. Now get this, when they gave AI the instructions on how to write that letter, they said, make it seem like we're doing them a favor. Try to make them almost feel happy when they see that they're going to get laid off. He said that AI came up with 10 or 20 versions of that letter in 3 or 4 minutes. And some of them were spectacular. He said he read one of them and it sounded like instead of getting laid off, you won the lottery. Bottom line, he said there's no future for any kid that thinks he's going to work in human resources. 9 out of 10 of those jobs are going to be replaced by AI. Don't let your kid pick human resources as a blossoming career. It ain't going to happen. Instead of a company with 20 human resource people, it'll be one guy with one computer hooked up to ChatGPT-4. By the way, speaking of ChatGPT, have you used it yet? The free one, you know, is ChatGPT-3.5. And it's been claimed it has an IQ of about 115. Whereas ChatGPT-4, which is the paid version, has an IQ of about 140. Einstein's IQ, by the way, is 160. And right now, ChatGPT-5 is in beta version. It's supposed to have an IQ of 180. If you don't believe me, look it up. So just imagine when you're home, sitting around bored, and suddenly you think, wait a minute, I think I'll talk and hang out with someone who's got an IQ 20 points higher than Einstein. No joke, it's a reality today. we all have or will have in the next year or so access to an entity or pal or buddy even who's smarter than Einstein. Now, according to my nerd friends, they're all a lot smarter than I am. They're telling me that in 2 or 3 years, the world as we know it will no longer exist. For one, lots of existing careers will be obsolete, like teachers, human resources guys, and translators. But you knew that already, right? I've heard that about 60% of all white-collar jobs will be obsolete. Blue-collar, grunt work jobs, not so much. But if you've got a white-collar job and you're not the boss, look out. So what about Latin America? Well, down here, we've got that lag time thing going. You know what that means, don't you? Golden opportunities for gringos and expats coming down here looking to start a business. Because you know what? I've been asking around. Here in Latin America, almost no one, I'm talking about Latinos now, knows what ChatGPT is. Whereas about 30 or 40% of gringos and expats I mentioned it to, they know pretty much exactly what it is. That means if you come down here, start a business, and get ChatGPT to do your marketing and advertising, you will kick ass. Because I'll tell you what, one thing ChatGPT is absolutely brilliant at is advertising and promotion. You know, designing and placing ads and writing copy. And I mean absolutely excellent and to the point ad copy. For example, suppose you wanted to sell some boutique coffee online. ChatGPT could develop your entire marketing plan and write the copy and create the artwork and packaging. You tell it you want the most outrageously gripping title line, no problem. It'll come up with 100 of them. You tell it to punch it up, it'll punch it up. You tell ChatGPT you only want 11 words in the title line, it'll do it. You tell it to pick a fantastic product name, it'll give you dozens. If you're still not satisfied, you tell it, give me 50 more. You could tell it to market your product to the exact demographic you want, and it'll come up with a plan in 2 minutes. Suppose you had a product you only wanted to market to gray-haired old grandmas with prosthetic knees, living in Schenectady. No problem. ChatGPT will give you a brilliant marketing plan. And believe me, I'm not just talking out of my ass here. I've done that test with a new product. No, not for gray-haired old ladies with prosthetic knees. What I'm saying is I've seen how it works. I've seen the results. It absolutely shocked and scared the hell out of me at the same time. So get ready. AI's coming. Actually, it's here already. And in the next 2 or 3 years, it really is going to take the world by storm. You think it's not happening? I got a buddy who works at Boeing. He told me one of the projects they've got going right now is taking a 757, you know, the big jumbo? Or is it 767? I don't remember. They told ChatGPT, or their version of AI, to redesign the whole thing, make it 30% lighter and 20% more fuel efficient. Well, guess what? It mulled over the existing blueprints and specs for a couple hours and came up with a completely new revolutionary design. Are you getting this? You could take ChatGPT or whatever version of AI and have it improve any product existing right now. And it'll think of ways of doing it that no human has ever thought of before. I know, it sounds like science fiction, but it's here. And already I've been told by a friend of mine that works in the insurance biz up in the States. He said there will come a time, probably in the next year or so, that it will be considered malpractice if you go to your doctor and he does not use artificial intelligence or whatever version of ChatGPT or OpenAI to make his diagnostic decisions. Because it's already been determined that a program like ChatGPT-4 does a better job of diagnosis than your average medical specialist. This is sinking in, right? All right, yanking the wheel here. I think on my next Expat File show, I'll tell you a real eye-opening, boots-on-the-ground, gringa expat plastic surgery story. Yep, I held her hand and chauffeured her around through it. I got the dope. Ladies especially, you're going to love this one. Not enough time today to go into it. However, I will read you this related email from Doris, Evanston, Illinois. She says, Johnny, my husband and I have 1 foot in Latin America and 1 foot in Illinois. We're not preppers, but we're ready for anything. When it hits the fan up here, we'll pack 4 suitcases, take the next flight to Guatemala, say goodbye to the land of Lincoln, and start the next chapter in our lives. That said, Johnny, lately you've been speaking a bit about mating and dating, etc. And in the past, you touched a bit on plastic surgery and Botox in Latin America, too. Well, Johnny, when I was a teenager, all my girlfriends were getting nose jobs. It seemed like a rite of passage for your 16th birthday. In fact, she said 2 out of 4 of my best high school friends got their noses done at 16. As for me, she says, I've always had a very prominent-looking nose, but had no interest in surgery. mostly because it looked painful and my girlfriends had black eyes after the fact. Fast forward, I got married, had a couple of kids, and one of my daughters turned 16 and wanted a nose job. I said, sure, go ahead if that's what you want, but I'm not paying for it. Well, her dad, being a soft touch, gave in. And in fact, it was a good job. It did look nice. Now, fast forward again, and here we are. I'm 69 and my husband's 72. And a few months ago, I went to my 50-year high school reunion. And guess what? All my childhood friends who had nose jobs got their old noses back. Plus, it seemed like everyone had really big earlobes, especially the ones who wore big dangly earrings, if I recall. By the way, Johnny, we've got three teenage granddaughters. And what do you think two of them are hinting at from Grandma and Grandpa for Christmas? Signed, Doris and Sam. Hope to buy you a cup of coffee soon, Johnny. Our plan B is Antigua, Guatemala. Well, thanks for that, Doris, but a cup of coffee, that's it? At least throw in a croissant, a brownie, or a piece of cheesecake. Sheesh. Anyway, when Doris was talking about nose jobs, I couldn't help but think of the Fontabella Mall. I was talking about that on the last show in Guatemala City. That's Guatemala's most high-end mall, where all the snooty rich folks and their entitled kids hang. Funny thing, too, once I was invited to a Sunday brunch at a restaurant there in Fontabella Mall, and sitting at a table right across from me was a group, some kind of special event, maybe it was a birthday, I can't remember. But what struck me out of the 15 people sitting down there, two of the girls, teenage girls with fake straight blonde hair, of course. Nothing wrong with bottle blonde hair, sometimes it looks real nice. But, genetically speaking, it's something that's just not a natural look for Latinas and Latinos, since most all of them are born with jet black hair. Even so, you see Latina bottle blondes here and there, especially at upscale malls. Anyway, the two ladies at the table in front of me had tape over their nose. They just had nose jobs. I thought, this is interesting. Unlike what American girls might do in that situation, they weren't hiding at home and they had their new noses on display. Then, on my way to the John, two more young ladies at different tables had tape on their noses. I could only deduce it was Exhibit Your Nose Job Day at the upscale mall. Oh, and one more thing. I remember when I was a kid, my parents didn't have any money for extras. So when my sister turned 16 and she asked my mom for a nose job, she said what all mothers say to their big-nosed daughters when they can't afford to have it fixed. She said, knock it off. You've got a nice nose. Yep, parents, even good Catholic parents, will lie.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.